Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn, here with Maddie Lee and two special guests today on the podcast as we continue our series going into the Northwest Division. We've already done podcasts with Utah Jazz writer Eric Woodyard of the Deseret News. We've also done a podcast with John Krasinski of The Athletic talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. And today we have in a very special guest, Mike Singer of the Denver Post. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Don't forget to introduce our second special guest.
Maddie, why don't you introduce our special second guest?
All right. Sitting to my left, we have David Dishman, our standout business reporter, who happens to also be a massive Nuggets fan.
That's right. That's right.
Dishman, tell us about your wardrobe choices today.
I am currently wearing the Mile High City Edition jersey of Michael Porter Jr., who I am anxiously waiting to see make his debut. I'm a Mizzou alum, so...
I wish you'd just left that out and let people wonder.
We have a special connection, I feel. If I ever meet him, I'll tell him.
I feel like Mike probably has the same anticipation for the Michael Porter Jr. era. Am I wrong, Mike?
No, you're not wrong. I mean, that is what everybody is talking about this offseason is, you know, this lottery pick that was the former number one recruit in the country. We've seen the highlight videos, and then all we've seen for the past, let's say, 16, 17 months, our reports trickling out of the Nuggets practice gym that this guy is going to be a game changer. I mean, there were talk during Summer League that someone on ESPN went on and said that he has Hall of Fame potential.
Oh my God.
Dave,
you okay?
I know. Do we need to check out what's his status? Are we okay?
I'm good.
We have a pulse.
I'm good, yeah.
Which I just think is disingenuous to do to a kid who has not played competitive basketball since the NCAA tournament in 2018 at Mizzou. And he's had a slew of injuries. He had another back surgery. He, at this point, has dealt with hip, ankle, and obviously the back surgeries all together before playing a professional game. So I think it's a little bit unfair to throw all this stuff at him. That being said, from talking to people within the Nuggets organization, they are super high on him. And the thought is he going to play 15, 20 minutes a game? Are we going to treat him with white gloves? Someone told me that if he's healthy, he needs to be starting and he needs to play 30 minutes a game. So I get that that's a huge caveat. If he's healthy, I think that is the caveat that goes along with his career right now. But there are the expectations, I mean, I don't have to tell you, are soaring.
It's really fascinating, and he can be an X factor certainly, but it's fascinating that somebody thinks that he could be starting considering, you know, I wake up this morning and do a little research on the Nuggets just to refresh myself, and I'm looking at this lineup, and I'm like, I'm just going down the salary list. And you get to number 12 in salary on this roster, and you get to Monte Morris. And Monte Morris was one of the best, you know, backup point guards in the league last year. He seemingly never turned the ball over. He was really sound for being such a young guard. This is one of the deepest teams in the league.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Even when you don't account for Michael Porter Jr., who's never played a single NBA minute of significance, it's really fascinating to look at this roster along with the players that they've added, the potential they have in Michael Porter Jr., the Jeremy Grant acquisition, which we'll talk about obviously because of his Thunder connections, and we've talked about all these things without even mentioning a potential MVP in Nikola Jokic, who's playing out of his mind for Serbia right now.
Right,
Michael, there's so much for this team. Even before you get to the Michael Porter equation, he could not play another game this season, and this would still be one of the best teams in the Western Conference.
Right. So first, let me address the Porter thing real quick. The reason why I think that there's a possibility that he could start, I don't know if he will, but we'll learn a lot during preseason. But the reason why that is being floated as a possibility is because the biggest question mark the Nuggets have is at the three. Will Barton was their starter going into last year. He got hurt the second game of the year, missed half the season. He came back in January and was sort of playing catch up the entire time. He ended up starting at the three throughout the playoffs, and then Michael Malone had to switch him because he was getting beat on defense, and he ended up putting Torrey Craig in at the three. So even entering this past off season, there were huge question marks at the three. And if you can throw in a guy who's 6'10", can shoot from three-point range like MPJ can, then you have to consider it. And so, again, if he goes off in the preseason, there's going to be whispers that, why are we keeping the most talented wing on the bench, and why aren't we getting the most we can out of him? So, you know, you're right. We need to get to Nikola Jokic. But to your point, I mean, this dude is getting all kinds of hype and hasn't even done anything yet. But there is an opening at the three, and that's why, you know, the offseason is filled with times for people to fill the void and conjecture. So that's sort of what we're doing.
You talked about depth. Or Eric just mentioned it. Question for everyone, including Mike first. Can you think of a better second unit in the league right now?
It's either them or the Los Angeles Clippers. And I know we're going to get to our you know, our Western Conference rankings, but I was thinking about this. I even ran this, again, past some Nuggets officials. If you took the Nuggets second unit, and that means Monte Morris, Malik Beasley, whoever is their backup three, be it Barton, Torrey Craig, Jeremy Grant, and Mason Plumlee, is that five, and MPJ if he doesn't start, is that five better than some teams' current starting lineups?
You could probably make the case that they would not be the worst team in the league.
I think that they're better than Charlotte. I think they're, you know, probably potentially better than the Wizards.
Phoenix.
Maybe the Magic. Phoenix, sure.
Whoa, so, easy on the Magic there. Easy, sir. Watch it. The Magic are a sleeper in the East this year. People are drinking the Magic Kool-Aid. Mike's not convinced.
Including Eric, who was in Florida recently.
Noted.
Not in Orlando.
I know. Close enough.
But to your point, I mean, I think that they're deeper than some actual starting lineups in the NBA. And that's why, you know, they didn't make a ton of moves this offseason. The Jeremy Grant acquisition was the big one. They're bringing back a ridiculously deep team, and that's why people are high on them. I mean, people are banking on continuity. This is the only team in the NBA that has increased their win total over the past 4 years. You know, and the Nuggets are relying on that incremental growth. And, you know, you bank on Nikola Jokic, you bank on Jamal Murray, and those are the guys that they're basically 10 or 11 deep right now. And for the guys at the end of the rotation, I don't know how they get on the court. And that's just, you know, that's probably a positive of the culture that they've built there.
Dave, do you have any input?
No, I agree. And getting to watch them a ton, and I feel like I probably watched them more than anybody else in this entire state, but they're so fun to watch. And when they run those guys in and out and in just waves, and you're like, when they're playing these games and these other teams are hitting their starters and they're pulling them and they're hitting their scraping the bottom of their barrel, and we're running in all these fresh legs, and you're like, holy cow, this is so much fun. It just makes for a fun team to watch, and especially because they seem to play well together, even first team and second team, when you get those mixtures and those weird times throughout the game. I love watching it all.
Dave, how's it feel to hear a bunch of sports writers just going on and on about how
gush.
It's crazy, because I never hear anybody talk about the Nuggets. I've been following them since the Nick Van Exel days, I mean, you know, back when Carmelo was with the team and we had a few good years, obviously they were decent, but never considered it, I don't think, as highly as they are right now. So it's fun to see.
Mike, I wanted to talk about Jeremy Grant. Just for the people who listen to our podcast and obviously have followed Jeremy Grant for years now. But I want to talk about Jeremy Grant in regard to how the Nuggets are going to go about their team going forward. Jeremy Grant's obviously on a great contract. He's a guy who's going to be I think he's going to have a player option going into this summer in 2020. But
in a really not competitive free agent class.
Right. But I look at it from a perspective of the Paul Millsap situation, where Paul Millsap's in the final year of his deal making the biggest salary on the team of $30 million. Do the Nuggets look at Jeremy Grant as kind of a potential replacement for Paul Millsap, to where they could possibly look at dangling Millsap before the deadline? Or is that a situation where they want to keep Millsap and Jeremy Grant throughout the season and bring Jeremy Grant off the bench? Because Jeremy Grant showed for the Thunder last season that he's a guy who can really fill that position as a stretch four and really be an impact player there, not just offensively but defensively. And he's doing it for a fraction of the price that you're paying Millsap.
Right. So there's a few layers to that. First of all, I think that the Nuggets see Jeremy Grant as their four of the future. At his introductory press conference, Tim Connelly said, who's the Nuggets president of basketball operations, said that he expects him to be there for years. Now, obviously, is he getting ahead of himself, given that he could be a free agent next year? Potentially, but they love the addition of Grant, and they've wanted to get Grant for a number of years. Secondly, I think that Paul Millsap, given his contract, given his status with the team, given just sort of a glue guy in every locker room that he's been in, but especially last year with such a young Nuggets team, he's going to start. What's really interesting is whether Nuggets decide to keep Grant on the bench to close games. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that he played a little bit of five last year in a small ball five for the Thunder.
Yeah, and much more the year before, too.
Right. So I think that they could conceivably pair him and Millsap, and you put Torrey the three, you put Gary Harris at the two, and that's a damn good defensive lineup to potentially close games with. Now, I guess I'm removing Nicole Jokic from the equation, but, looking at it from a defensive perspective, you want to get Grant in there. In terms of whether Paul Millsap can be dangled, I think that that's a really valid question, and I was going to bring up when we were talking about the depth that I think the Nuggets may have to consider consolidating the talent that they have. They have two guys on expiring deals in Paul Millsap and Mason Plumlee. They also have, like I mentioned, a ton of wings. And I know that there is a lot of interest in guys like Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, and potentially even Will Barton, where they could make a move. So I don't know, if you pair one of those wings with Millsap in a huge salary dump, then potentially Jeremy Grant, that paves the way for Jeremy Grant to have that starting four spot. I know that the Nuggets love Grant's defensive versatility, the fact that he can probably guard convincingly 2 to 5. And I mean, that's the first thing Malone told me when I talked to him about the trade in Vegas. He goes, I can't even believe how defensively versatile this guy is. And that's to say nothing of the fact of how well I think he's going to pair with Nikola Jokic, just, you know, in the pick and roll game and rim running and moving without the ball. I mean, I think it's going to be a fantastic duo, and I know that the Nuggets were lauded for that move this summer.
Yeah, the Thunder certainly took a hit on the defensive end when they, I mean, obviously with Paul George, but then the second blow was Jeremy Grant, and suddenly you saw they had a couple improvements at other positions, but whew, that hurts.
Was the real beginning of the end, I thought, here, Mike, when the Thunder, you know, they trade Paul George, and you think, okay, well, this is something that, you know, maybe they pivot in a different direction. They try, you know, to go with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari, Russell Westbrook, Jeremy Grant. That's still a solid team. But then they trade Jeremy Grant, and you're like, okay, this is
they're Russell, throwing it in.
Russell Westbrook's probably not going to be here. That was the one that was kind of the blow, because you kind of saw what they were doing in terms of trying to, you know, lower their salary cap and number, and Jeremy Grant being as valuable as he is at the contract he's on. We've seen it the last 3 years, this guy developed from, you know, a guy who could barely dribble to someone who has a little bit of everything. And he turned himself into a 39% three-point shooter. I agree with you. I think he's going to make Jokic's life just incredibly easier. That's going to – I mean, the way that Jokic and Jamal Murray can run pick and roll with Jokic as the ball handler, you can do the same with Jeremy Grant as the screen setter who can either pop out to three or be the rim runner and Jokic be the passer. It's terrifying how much you can do, and this is a perfect segue into Jokic, because you have a guy like that who's so skilled and so unselfish at the center spot that you can run so many different pick and roll combinations. And Jeremy Grant on the defensive end – is the perfect pairing for Jokic from a standpoint of being a rim protector that Jokic may not be. It really covers up for a lot of – Jeremy Grant covers a lot of deficiencies no matter what team he's on. And he did that a lot defensively for the Thunder. And I think it's just really a perfect landing spot for him. And it sucks that he's not here because I want to cover him. He's a great player. But I don't think that you can make a better move – you know, we've heard in the past couple years, or maybe even last year, you know, Kevin Love would be a good fit there or something like that. I think Jeremy Grant's an even better fit than a Kevin Love because of what he gives you defensively.
And he still hasn't reached his potential, too.
Yeah, which he's still growing as a player.
Crazy.
And he doesn't get hurt.
I have a question for you guys. Selfishly, I want to know what Jeremy Grant is like to deal with from a media perspective. He was pretty buttoned up at his introductory press conference, and I mean, he doesn't say a lot, but he seems to be, from what I read, very well regarded within the locker room. Can you give Nuggets fans a bit of a preview of what he's like, just, you know, as a person?
So the thing is, he's actually so funny, and I say this in the best way, really weird. Total pleasure to cover, but he does, as soon as the recorders come out, he clams up, and he will do and say all the right things, but you really don't get a taste of his personality until the cameras and the recorders turn off, and then you realize he's got all these other interesting sides to him. I wrote a story about how he like designs and decorates is the wrong word, but jean jackets, and they're really cool and bizarre, and you know, he has, like you said, great relationships with his teammates, and is just kind of like really goofy, which you don't get a lot of that in front of the camera.
Being the son and nephew of former NBA players, I think he has a very strong understanding of what he wants to say when he's on the record. And when he's off the record, like Maddie said, he's jovial, he's playful. He was immediately one of the guys who was well-respected in the locker room from veterans like Russell Westbrook and Paul George, despite his age. I think that Jeremy Grant's going to fit in there nicely. If you want to get better stories out of him, you want to get him to the side by himself.
He has handshakes with, like, everyone from the PR people to his teammates. Just, like, specific handshakes.
What about you guys? Did you guys develop handshakes, or didn't get that far?
I did not have a handshake with Jeremy Grant, but
okay.
I did see him at my neighborhood Target and Chipotle multiple times, to where we were able to actually have some deeper conversations outside of a scrum. But he's just so much better outside of a scrum situation.
He'd do the like the fake out handshake thing to me, but was never consistent, so I was always fooled. It's really embarrassing. I like was having flashbacks from elementary school when it was rough, but
in my hand pocket.
If you can't tell, we were fans of Jeremy Grant. The guy was he was great to work with, and he was great to watch develop over the last few years.
Well, and I only got to see one season of him, but Eric, you got to see the whole progression of him playing the three and the five.
It was fantastic to watch, and he's selfless in that regard, because every year the Thunder was asking him to do something different, and you never got a sense that he was a guy who was ever complaining about those things, and it's paid off for him, and it's going to pay off for him again once he gets a new deal, probably in the summer of 2020. Ideal segue. Well, we had it, and then we went into Jeremy Grant Love Fest.
It's all good.
But I remember when I first started covering the Thunder, and it seems like this was ages ago, and Dave can probably, kind of give us some background on this as a fan. But I remember when Mike Malone had the was trying to play Nurkic and Jokic together.
Oh, yeah.
And then Nikola Jokic was coming off of the bench until Nurkic was traded. And I remember that the Thunder, every time they'd play the Nuggets in Kevin Durant's final season in 2015-16, these were three-quarter games. And the Thunder treated them as such. Russell Westbrook would get a triple-double in the first three quarters. And the starters would sit for the final quarter because they were demolishing the Nuggets. And you saw the inklings of a young team that had potential. And this might have even before that might have been the year even before they got Jamal Murray. But as the years progressed, you saw a team that got feistier and feistier, and a team that was more combative. Even the year where Westbrook put him out with the shot and in the 50-point game and the triple double. Mm-hmm. That eliminated Denver from playoff contention in Denver. As the years progressed, this Denver team started to flip it on the Thunder. You know, Kevin Durant left, the talent got better, Jokic became more comfortable in his role, and I think that shift started when Jokic became and matured into the MVP caliber player that he is. So, Dave, I guess that'll get us into the Jokic conversation. What has it been like for you to watch that guy go from, you know, trying to play Twin Towers, coming off of the bench, and become this guy now that we look at as like the best center in the NBA?
Right. Well, for a while there, you could never remember which one was which because it was Jokic and Nurkic.
Yeah.
You'd say one name and mix it because you were thinking of one but saying the other. And but I remember being in Chicago for a wedding and talking to a buddy of mine who lives there now, and he was like, dude, this guy is special. He's backing up right now and coming off the bench, but he is the future. And so I started paying him a little closer attention.
Learning his name.
Making sure I knew which of the Balkan Towers I was talking about. But it was impressive. And they didn't get a lot of TV games, like you're saying, because they were not good at all and getting blown out often. But when you could see them here in Oklahoma, it was a lot of fun. And just the way that he passes, handles the ball, everything from a man of that size, and the way they started to build that around him was so fun to watch, because they were kind of like a motley crew of folks with, you know, they drafted Emmanuel Mudiay, who didn't pan out, and folks like that. That then you started to get, like you mentioned, Jamal Murray came, Gary Harris, all these folks that really complimented that, and then you ran the offense through them. And it was just so much fun to see. And I hate the Golden State Warriors, so I hate that I'm going to bring them up. But it was similar. I felt very similar to watching a young team on their end grow and develop and do a very set offensive style that was fun to watch and exciting to see. So, and all built through Nikola Jokic.
From my perspective, and just a bit of context, I used to work at USA Today, and I was our NBA editor. So this was 2-3 years ago. So I used to, you know, have to pay attention to the whole league. But when Jokic started having his moments, or sort of before that, my sense was that he was always sort of like a cult figure in NBA circles. Like, you had to actively go and find Jokic highlights. Like Dave said, not on national television a lot. Such a unique center. His body shape is obviously different than any other centers in the NBA.
I believe Dan Le Batard compares him to a loaf of bread.
I can tell you that those descriptions don't sit well within the Nuggets locker room. They hear they hear him. Someone else compared him to a carton of milk. and the Nuggets, at least the Nuggets PR staff, was not happy about that. So, I'm always very careful and delicate with how I describe him. But the best part about it is that he is able to laugh at himself. He is self-effacing. He does not really care that he is not a chiseled, center down low like Joel Embiid, he doesn't care. I mean, he's still putting up. I mean, the fact that a guy like that at 24 can finish fourth in the MVP voting, I don't know what incentive he has to, you know, become more chiseled. If you're already putting up those sort of numbers, I don't know why you need to.
Hey, bro, sort of don't fix it.
Don't fix it. So from my perspective, he was just sort of a cult figure, and then, you know, jumping on this beat last year, you see just the impact that he has, and he honest to God raises every one of his teammates' level of play just with his vision. I did a story last year where he used to practice throwing the balls to players in practice if they weren't looking, just so he could train them to keep an eye out when they weren't paying attention. He used to hit players in the face with Paul Millsap. Told me he got smacked in the face by one of Jokic's passes when he was just messing around.
He's an incredible passer. He's probably one of the best we've seen at the center position. He had a pass against Steven Adams in a game this year. I was just like, I've never seen somebody throw one by Steven Adams like that. And it's not very often you see Steven Adams get bamboozled by guys, but Jokic has been one of the few guys that's kind of had Steven Adams' number, particularly last season where Denver went 4-0 against him.
Well, I was going to say, your unflattering comparisons. Folks that are making those, I feel like they're looking – obviously it's low-hanging fruit, but – you're looking at all the wrong stuff. I mean, the footwork, the passing, everything that comes with him as a player is so interesting to watch. And if all you can see is a guy that doesn't look ripped, then you don't have much appreciation for good basketball, in my opinion.
It's a great point.
Zing!
In my personal Denver Nuggets opinion.
No, it's a great point. It is like the lowest common denominator. Oh, he doesn't look like a traditional center. So therefore, you know, I don't know if this dude can really put up numbers like that. But once you see him on a nightly basis, the things he does, I mean, this is the this guy threw the ball off the backboard last year in throwing himself an assist. I mean, those are things that LeBron and Russell Westbrook do. This is not, but Jokic just does it. And you're just like, did that really just happen? And I mean, he just sort of defies all odds. And what's so interesting is when you're talking about the Nurkic-Jokic debate, I think Malone realized in 2016 that this guy is going to be the franchise. They need to invert the offense and build it around him. And if he needs to be the point guard on some plays, if they're going to run inverted pick and rolls with Joel Murray, so be it. He's a decent enough ball handler, especially for his size. He can hit from outside. And as a point center, you can't do much better. And then just obviously the thought of pairing him with guys like some of their offseason additions, like we mentioned, Jeremy Grant. They also drafted Bol Bol. And if that guy ever gets on the court, I don't even know how you defend Bol Bol and Nikola Jokic. But I mean, at that point, it's just fantasy to try to consider. But
it's a lot of hype.
They are doing some interesting things. And again, like you guys said, it does revolve all around Jokic.
Mike, what do you think was the downfall for Denver last year in the series against Portland? Because just off the top of my head, I can't recall ultimately over seven games. And obviously, if you go seven with a team, then you were close to winning the series. But there's particularly a game at Denver where I recall the Nuggets had a ton of offensive rebounds and they didn't finish those offensive rebounds. Now, that's just one instance of one game in a series. But what do you think was the downfall of this team when it came to beating Portland and getting to the Western Conference Finals?
Well, I mean, they let CJ McCollum get loose.
He was awesome. He was outstanding.
He had a hell of a series. And they did a fantastic job. I mean, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but they bottled up Damian Lillard as well as you can bottle up Damian Lillard. So, you know, to sort of not put the emphasis on CJ McCollum really burned them. I mean, the bench, like we talked about all, you know, earlier, it did not step up like it had throughout the rest of the season. Mason Plumlee had a really, really bad playoff. And Monte Morris, one of the best backup point guards in the league, he hit a wall. He admitted, I mean, but the season before last, Monte Morris had only played about 30 games. Including G League stops. Now we're asking him to play 90 plus games. And he admitted he hit a wall. So basically their depth fell off. Jokic continued to get battered.
And we lost him.
Oh, shit. Maddie, can you call him back on your phone?
Yep. Darn it. Will you send me his contact number?
I can't. My phone's dead.
I don't have his contact. I'll message him. I don't think I have him.
No.
Am I?
We're almost done. He's going to describe that, and then we're going to do the predictions, and then we're going to bounce.
Perfect. Get my
charger. Portland series. I
forgot.
Somebody left me in the bar. One night.
Okay. I made it through three overtimes. How's it feel? Have you been on the podcast before?
I've done the back when they used to do the Oklahoman Unfolded or whatever, and Ben would.
But you haven't been on Thunder Buddies?
No.
Did you get them?
I messaged him. Oh, he's messaging me back.
Yep, tell him my phone died.
I did.
It was only 16%, and then it just.
And I was like, nope, can't do it.
Can't do it.
Hello?
Sorry.
Sorry, Mike.
No worries.
All right.
We're back in business.
Okay.
We're going to go.
I don't know where I stopped. I was on a rant.
You were on a roll. It was great.
Okay. Talking about CJ McCollum getting loose and bottling up Damian Lillard, but.
Let's give it one. Let me give it 1 second. Let's count down into it. 3, 2. Sorry for that, folks. My phone died. My bad. Mike Singer of the Denver Post was talking about the Portland-Denver second-round series and why the Denver Nuggets kind of lost that series in 7 games. Mike?
All right, perfect. So, like I said, they did as good of a job as anyone could do on Lillard. They let McCollum go off in Game 7. I think Jamal Murray had a really bad Game 7. I believe he was 4 of 18 without – I would need to double-check that. But really what happened throughout the entire playoffs – is that the depth that had been such a strength of theirs the entire year fell off. Mason Plumlee had a really bad postseason. And that obviously put more onus on Nikola Jokic. I'm assuming you guys remember the 65-minute game that Jokic had to play against Portland in Game 3. So there was that. Then Monte Morris, who had been one of the best backup point guards in the NBA, he admitted that he hit a wall. The year before, he'd only played about 30 games as a result of bouncing between the G League and the NBA. And the Nuggets are asking him to play 90-plus games, and he said he just hit a wall. So there's more stress being put on the starters. And what I always like to do, you know, when you sort of have to do a referendum on this second-round series is you have to look big picture. This is a team that hadn't won a postseason series in a decade. They hadn't been to the playoffs in, I think, 6 years. So the fact that they got to the second round, they extended it to 7 games, was going to be a win in and of itself. Maybe they were more talented. Maybe they should have beaten Portland and gotten to the conference finals. But in my opinion, I think it's honestly probably a good thing that they did not win that series. And here's why. Because had they gotten to the conference finals, the expectations and the pressure of going into this season would have been significantly higher. And had they not gotten to the conference finals again this year, then that would have been viewed as a regression. And I think that that's unfair because they took so many steps forward last year. No one anticipated them going from the 9 seed, jumping up to the 2 seed. The Nuggets entered last year just wanting to make the playoffs. Malone said that they wanted to be the 7 or the 8 seed. And then when they started flirting with that 1 seed and the 2 seed throughout the majority of the year, the Nuggets had some pinch themselves moments. They did not realize that they were going to be this good this quick.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, in talking about all this, I remembered suddenly that how bad the team was when Jokic was off the floor in that series. I think the on-off numbers with Jokic were pretty staggering. But then, you know, it reminds me of the Thunder in a sense that, you know, young teams kind of have to go through that progression and going into the playoffs, losing tough series. And the Thunder did that year over year until they were finally able to get to an NBA Finals and overcome the Spurs in that six-game series in 2012. So I think that it's kind of a natural progression for some teams. I think that as basketball watchers, we've kind of gotten used to seeing teams like the Warriors, you know, all of a sudden just go win an NBA title after not being anywhere close to that the previous season. But we forget that the Mark Jackson years where the Warriors had to progress to that point. You know, they had to go through some years where they were getting eliminated in tough series, and they showed their progress, and then eventually they made their leap. I think Denver's in a similar light as the Thunder and those young Warrior teams.
Well, and the Thunder did it pretty quick. It was like year, and then we're here.
Well, but the Thunder had a year where they were terrible. Then they had a year where they lost in the first round to the Lakers, and then they had a year where they lost in the Western Conference Finals to Dallas. But then, basically, they had to have 2 years of playoffs in order to get to the point to where they were able to get into the Western Conference Finals against the Spurs and then the NBA Finals. And that's a pretty quick ascent. But like Mike was saying, Denver wasn't even in the playoffs last year. I mean, they were one of the – I think they were the last team out, I believe. I think Minnesota beat them. And Minnesota got the 8 seed. But, you know, the Nuggets went from no playoffs, and you can even go back another season. They went from being eliminated from playoff contention by the Thunder on that last second shot by Russell Westbrook in the 2016-17 season to last team out, being a 9 seed, to the number 2 seed this past year. So, as Mike's saying, it's kind of a natural progression, but it's also it's a big jump to make in 1 year, and you'd imagine that they'll be more prepared this season when they're ready to make another jump.
You mentioned Golden State when they the Splash Brothers were young and Andrew Bogut was still their center. They knocked off the Nuggets the Nuggets were the 3 seed, and it was a big win for Golden State. In the next round, they got annihilated by Tim Duncan and the Spurs because they just weren't ready. Mm-hmm. But it gave them that extra experience, and then they morphed into what we know of them today. To back up your point on that natural growth.
All right, let's get to it, Mike. I gave you a little bit of homework. Did you do your homework?
I did my homework.
Awesome, man.
Did he give it to you too, Dish?
I didn't give it to Dave.
No. Let's see if I can do it on the fly.
Might be able to do it on the fly. But basically, for those of y'all who have been listening for the past week or so, I've been giving the visiting beat writers some homework to do in terms of their Western Conference standings. We've gone through the Western Conference standings with those beat writers. We're going to do the same thing with Mike, and we will berate him as necessary when we get to a team that we don't agree with. Mike, let's start with your top 8 in the Western Conference. Let's start at the top, and then let's go down to 8, because I think that the top, a lot of us are going to have some agreement, but once we get down to to 8 and then we get into the lottery teams, we're going to start to see a little bit more disagreement.
Although with Eric Woodyard, we had disagreement right off the top,
but
so
Eric,
you never know.
Eric actually changed my mind a little bit about the Warriors this year.
Me too.
He changed my mind a little bit. I'm interested to see where Mike has the Warriors landing in his top 8, or if they're even in his top 8. Mike, what are you starting with at the top for this season in the Western Conference?
All I'm saying is I'm glad we're not doing the East, because my magic ranking would plummet, and I think I'd get berated for that. So I'm glad we're sticking to that. Atop the West, I'm going with the Clippers. I don't think that that's very outlandish, and I wonder whether some might think that I would go with the Nuggets. I just think that the talent that they got in Kawhi, in Paul George, and obviously coupling that with the bench that they have, and Lou Williams and Harrell, I think that they're the best team. I think that they enter this season as the favorites to win the title. And I remember when, the night that all went down, we were in Las Vegas, And some Nuggets executives were telling me, like, oh, my God, how are we supposed to defend those two wings? And that's just not a Nuggets question. That's a question that anybody, you know, with designs on contending in the West has to answer themselves. And the only thing I wanted to add about those two wings is that when the Nuggets traded for Jeremy Grant, I was told that at least some part of the discussion was that who's potentially available would have a better chance at slowing down Paul George than Jeremy Grant. So yeah. All I know is that was part of the discussion.
It makes sense because you're probably going to have long stretches where you have Torrey Craig guarding, you know, either the team's best guard or wing, as he did probably better than anybody I've seen against Russell Westbrook last year. Yeah. And then you'll have Jeremy Grant on the other guy. You know, Torrey Craig's a guy who's going to be assigned probably on like a Lou Williams at times. And then Jeremy Grant is going to be the one that's on the Kawhi or Paul George. And then if those two are on the floor together, then they'll probably be defending both of those guys, which will leave the Nuggets at sort of a disadvantage offensively. But you'd hope they'd be able to make up for that with Jokic and Jamal Murray, and maybe Michael Porter can give you something too. But they're well equipped. Look, they're as equipped as any team with those two guys to be able to defend Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And I thought that Gary Harris has turned into, you know, a pretty capable wing defender himself, even though he's not as big as a Paul George or a Kawhi Leonard.
So do you have then Denver too?
I do. Because it was a nice segue.
I think Eric and I had it flipped. I think, right?
Yeah, I had Denver 1.
I had Denver 1, too. And my reasoning behind that was just I think that the Clippers are going to do better in the postseason, but they've also got injuries and question marks there, especially with Paul George's shoulders, and we don't know what Kawhi's minutes are going to look like. And so I'm not that confident. I mean, they're going to do well in the regular season. That's why I have them at 2. But that's the bump that I gave Denver.
So let me put a caveat. I have them at 2, and I feel like I'm about to get berated. But
yep, probably.
I think that there's a possibility. I wouldn't be shocked if they were anywhere from 2 to 6.
Interesting.
I really think, and I'm not the only one who thinks that. Like, even talking to Nuggets assistants, they would not be like. That's how competitive it is. That's not a knock on what they did last year. And I'm certainly not going to predict that they finish as the sixth seed and don't have home court advantage after what they did last year. But I don't think it's outlandish that, you know, Utah, Houston, Portland, those sorts of teams could conceivably jump them. I mean, one bad week, two bad weeks means you lose 3 or 4 games in the standings, and that's all it's going to take. So I don't think it's that crazy that they could finish, you know, somewhere in that range. But
maybe you've got to move them down and move Houston up.
Give me a 2. I'm sticking with them at 2.
Who you got at 3?
I have Utah. I love what they did this offseason. I think that, you know, the addition of Bogdanovich and then obviously Conley will alleviate some pressure on Donovan Mitchell. They still obviously have Rudy Gobert, hell of a defensive player. And I love what they've amassed, but, you know, some of it. So I don't know if this is a ranking of where I think they're going to finish in the seeds or where I think they are going into the season. But, you know, I think that they will probably be better than where I rank them now by the end of the year. Just because I think that their offense will come together, that they'll learn to play off of each other. But there's going to be an adjustment period. And you know, in terms of figuring out where they ultimately finish, that may play a role. You know, like I said, a few games may dictate it, but I love what the Jazz did. And you know, had the Nuggets faced the Jazz last year in the postseason, I'm not so sure that the Nuggets would have advanced. The Jazz just gave the Nuggets fits, and you know, this year, who knows? They got rid of some of the guys that really gave Jokic trouble, and Jay Crowder and Derek Favors. So, but I'm getting far afield. I think the Jazz are the third best team. I love what they did this offseason.
Take us through your 4 through 8, and we'll stop you if we hear anything ridiculous.
Okay.
All right, I'm going Rockets. Rockets at four. You know, your guy, we'll see how that works. We'll see how that fits. I think that's probably one of the most interesting questions going into the NBA season. We'll see how, you know, Westbrook fits alongside James Harden, two high usage guys. At five, I'm going with the Lakers. No buzzer yet. We're good.
Ours are almost completely identical, or mine and yours, this point.
I'm going back and forth on the Lakers right now because I just don't like their roster compared to a lot of these other teams. But the teams you have ahead of the Lakers, I like their rosters better, so I really don't have any issues so far.
Okay, we're going Lakers five, then Blazers at six.
That's why I have two.
Okay.
We okay? I'm like walking on eggshells.
Yeah. Although last week we started, so... Yeah. Okay. I'll wait until you get to the Warriors, and then we'll talk about what we talked about last week.
All right. Next to the Warriors. I got the Warriors at seven.
Okay.
I think that's what I had,
too. Me, too. Starting to potentially reconsider that just because, I mean, obviously, you lose two of your best players, but on a roster like the Warriors, losing two of your best players, and one, maybe not for the entire – for the whole season, could see them towards the end – they can weather that better than most teams. And they, you know, made some moves. D'Angelo Russell obviously will be an exciting addition, and we'll see how that plays out. So I don't feel as good about Warriors at seven now as I did when I first made this list.
I had a couple points on the Warriors. First of all, when you lose Durant and you lose Iguodala and you lose Thompson for the majority of the year, your defense is going to take a huge hit.
Agreed.
That is true.
And I do wonder how much extra exertion the guys who normally thrive on offense are going to have to put forth on defense and whether that impacts their offense. I really do wonder about their defense. And then the guy who I thought was a fantastic addition is Willie Cauley-Stein. And I don't think he gets enough credit, maybe just because the Kings are like – you know, an outpost of the NBA. But I always loved Willie Cauley-Stein. I thought he moved really well for a big guy. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. He averaged 12-8 last year. That's not an insignificant addition. So, you know, I like what they're doing, and then I'm not going to discount Steph. And, you know, and I think that for the past how many years have we questioned what was the Warriors' motivation? They've already won 73. They've already won, you know, two titles in a row. What's the motivation here? I mean, they finally have it. They lost the finals. Everyone's discounting them. They finally have a reason to care about the regular season. So, and I don't think we should dismiss that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that defense, and the Warriors are going to have to play differently. They're not going to be able to throw out as many of those, you know, quote-unquote death lineups, because I don't think they're going to have the perimeter defense that they had without Klay. Or even Andre Iguodala. So you might see more of your more standard lineups with Willie Cauley-Stein at the five and Draymond Green at the four than you did those death lineups. And you know, Willie Cauley-Stein is not a terrible player. He's a player who I don't think has, you know, lived up to the expectations he had at his position that he was picked. But right. You know, anytime you go from the Kings to the Warriors, you'd expect a player to get better just by osmosis. And the Kings have been right. A better team in the last couple seasons. And I think that goes for D'Angelo Russell, too. I think that a lot of people are questioning the fit because he's a ball-dominant guy, but he can play off the ball, and I think that he's going to benefit from being just in the atmosphere of a Steph Curry, because Steph Curry demands so much attention that D'Angelo Russell is going to be able to get easier looks than he's ever had in his entire career. So I think that D'Angelo Russell is going to be a guy who's going to be able to play off ball of Steph and vice versa, because D'Angelo Russell's a good passer. I think he's going to grow as a player being in that Warriors system.
Yeah, I mean you're right. I just don't know what to make of it. I want to see before I really just weigh in on whether I think it's going to work. They're both good catch-and-shoot guys, so maybe they can, you know, draw some attention and add a little bit of gravity to their offense, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt just because of who they are, that they're going to be on the right side of the cut line. But I mean, I don't think I would bet on it. I think that they're probably going to be there, but I'm not entirely certain. This is where I think it gets fluid. I think 7 to what would this be? 8, 9, 10, 7 to 10 are pretty fluid.
Oh, interesting. Because I feel pretty good about my 1 through 4 and my 5 through 8, just not necessarily the order.
In their orders.
And then I feel pretty good about my guys who are not making. I mean, with some exceptions. Obviously, there are some what-ifs. But it would be wild if the Warriors didn't make the playoffs.
It would be wild.
I don't think they will.
Whoa!
Come on, Dave.
David Dishman coming in with the hot takes on his Thunder Buddies debut.
It's my
Dave Dishman with the take cannon.
All right.
Non-sports take. I don't want to interrupt, though.
No.
You're not interrupting.
You're not it. You are part of this podcast.
How is that not a sports take?
Yeah, so I think losing all those guys, I don't think Steph Curry's built to carry a whole team for an entire year. He's always had his running mate. He's always been able to get shots up because you can't really effectively double two guys. And with fewer options, I know there's D'Angelo Russell, but I don't think he's Klay Thompson.
And who is?
That's right. So I just think that over the course of the season, and I'm not wishing this on him, but I feel like he's going to carry a huge load. He could end up injuring himself or something along those lines in trying to play so much and do so much for one team. I just think it's going to be very, very different for him this year than years past, and so I don't think they're going to pull it off.
Mike, did you mention your 8?
I did not. I'm sticking with tried and true. I think the Spurs are going to be there at 8.
Same.
Okay.
I can't not have the Spurs in the playoffs.
They just win. They just figure out how to get it in.
And yeah, and similar to Mike saying like 2 through 6, like I just think that it'll be similar to last year in that, you know, the 5 through 8 are really going to be separated by a game or two. And you could even convince me into the Spurs getting back at DeJounte Murray, who's, you know, an all NBA defensive team kind of guy, and seeing the progression you've seen from Derek White, you could convince me into the Spurs making a jump and getting to 5. You know, you get another year of DeMar DeRozan in the system. They're a good team. And they'll also be getting contributions from a guy like Lonnie Walker, who didn't really contribute to them last year. They've got a group of young guards who can defend and create their own shots. Maybe not so much DeJounte Murray as a guy like Derek White. But the Spurs, you can convince me the Spurs could be a team that could be pushing for a home playoff seed. I don't think they'll get there, but they could be anywhere from 5 to 8. Mike, how do you feel about the lottery teams? Give us your lottery teams 8 through 15.
9 through 15.
Sorry, my no, math's a little
good,
off
all
there.
Good.
Math is hard.
All right. I have the Kings at 9.
Okay.
And I love their core. I mean, anyone. So I think had De'Aaron Fox not left Team USA, I think they would have been the prohibitive favorites during the FIBA World Cup. I really think he makes that much of a difference. He is going to be a problem once he matures. Bogdanovich, I don't know if you guys saw, he scored 31 points
yesterday. Yeah, he destroyed Italy. Yeah,
he's unbelievable. So him, Heald, and then Bagley, like, there are teams in the NBA that would kill for that core. Really. They really would. To have all those guys on that trajectory in that age bracket with their potential – really makes me wonder whether the Kings could snap their playoff drought. I don't think it's going to happen just because the West is so loaded, but they're going to be good. I have the Pelicans next. Are we still okay?
I love the Pelicans. I think they have.
I'm on the bandwagon.
They're going to have a lot of motivation because those LA guys are going to be motivated to to prove that they were their players outside of this toxic LA culture and in the LeBron kind of bubble. You're going to have veterans like Favors and Redick. You've got Drew Holiday still there. Etuan Moore is a solid player. It's unfortunate that my guy Darius Miller got hurt. I really like him. But then that's before we even mentioned Zion. So I think that, the Pelicans really have an exciting core and a good mix of kind of young and veteran players, and I think they're going to be one of those kind of pushing for a playoff spot too.
Right. So I wanted to make a point on the Pelicans. So I followed, you know, what David Griffin did pretty closely. I'm from Cleveland. I was around those Cavs teams. I don't know if this is as much just a story idea or if this is just a running theme that I thought of this summer, but the haul that David Griffin got from the Lakers compared to the haul that Oklahoma City got when they traded Paul George, I think is a fascinating story, because the only difference there, and you're talking top five, top 10 guys in the NBA getting traded, the only difference is that the trade request from Anthony Davis became public. So I always think about the haul and the leverage that David Griffin and Sam Presti had with what they got, and the fact that both were able to turn that much. I don't know who had the better return, but the only difference, in my opinion, is that is one of the trade requests got out in Anthony Davis, and Paul George's did not. So that's just an aside. Doesn't have anything to do with my rankings, but I thought it was interesting.
Now our listeners will know whose idea that was if we end up writing it.
Okay, good.
The big part of that was, you know, George's group waited until after the offseason to kind of make that public. We don't know if George was thinking that during the season.
And they never made it public either. It came out after the trade had gone down.
Right. So I just think it's an interesting subplot, which segues perfectly into my next team, which is the Thunder. I think, you know, you look at the team and you're like, man, in any other regular year, they could contend for a playoff spot. I really don't think that that's outlandish at all with Danilo and Shea and Steven Adams. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with the Chris Paul saga, but there's still a lot of talent on the team. It's really interesting what you guys said earlier, that Jeremy Grant was sort of the pivot point or the inflection point of what is this franchise going to do. But, I mean, there's still talent on their team, you know, this current iteration, and not to mention the 29 draft picks they have in the next few years.
I think that's the key phrase, this current iteration. What keeps giving me pause, and I've said it before on this podcast, and I will say it again, we don't know what this team is going to look like at the end of the year, so it's so hard to rank them. But, you know, obviously looking at the team right now, you see a lot of talent. Obviously, they took a defensive hit, but a lot of talent, potentially better shooting. But how long is Danilo Gallinari or Chris Paul going to be there will really determine what they end up looking like in the standings.
Right, and what do they move those guys for? Are they moving them for immediate help, or are they moving them for future help?
Right.
So it is really hard to rank them. But this current iteration, I think there's a lot of talent on the team. I just still think they're on the outside looking in. I have the Mavericks next. You know, I think that they're probably still one piece away from really contending. Kristaps Porzingis hasn't played in, I think, 18 months, coming off his ACL tear. Luka is going to be a stud if he's not already. They just don't have enough complementary or supplementary pieces, in my opinion, to really make noise. I know I mentioned the Kings as one of the best budding cores. I love the Grizzlies starting pieces. That's my next team, which would be 13. John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., I think, are rock stars. I just love what Jaren Jackson Jr. can do. And if John Morant is as electric as he was in college, you couldn't ask for two young, intriguing players to start a team with.
So, so Grizzlies over the Timberwolves.
Yes. Are we okay there? I'm not gonna
create friction over Grizzlies Timberwolves. I just think it's
in
interesting.
One spot.
I just think it's interesting that you believe in the Grizzlies that much this soon, because you know, Timberwolves still have Karl Anthony Towns and he's awesome, I don't know if the Timberwolves are going to make any moves. They certainly have like an expiring in Jeff Teague that's enticing to probably some teams that could want to get some money off their books next year. But yeah, it's just interesting that you would go Grizzlies over Timberwolves, and I don't like the Timberwolves' depth beyond their starting five. So I could see the Grizzlies making a minor jump, but again, I'm not gonna fight you over that. It's the bottom. It's the bottom of the Western Conference.
Yeah.
It's not so much that I am enamored with the Grizzlies as much as I just think the Timberwolves are toxic. I still like feel like there's a stench around their team from the Jimmy Butler saga. I really do. I mean, think about how much that cost them. That's cost them years at this point. When they traded the Bulls to get Jimmy Butler, that's a 2 or 3 year investment, and now they're recovering from it. And I don't know how the Andrew Wiggins contract is an albatross. I don't know what to do with that. He just did. You had to pay him, but he has not become the player you anticipated.
It's Eric's favorite player.
That's Barry Trammell's favorite player.
No,
okay, let's get this right.
Eric
okay?
goes on Hold plenty on. Of rants about how overrated he is.
No, I don't know. It's like, I'm not saying that. It's not me. It's the league. The guy's making way too much money for who he is. He smokes the Thunder a couple times a year, and he gets $120 some million. So
I like bringing it up because this happens.
But then Barry makes the argument that they should trade for him, and Barry all of a sudden he's my guy. Like I am anti trade for Andrew Wiggins. That is not how you replenish.
It should have happened by now. And as nice a way I can say it, I'm just not a big believer in him. And you're right, Cat is unbelievable and is a game changer, and you know is probably one of the two or three best centers in the league. Him and beating Jokic. But other than that, I covered the Bulls teams too, and I was around Tibbs. Like he was such a magnetic force that is now gone there, and I'm a little bit skeptical of Ryan Saunders. I mean, I think you got to prove it. He's 34, I think. So I'm just skeptical on the T-Wolves in general, and I feel like they're just floundering. Speaking of floundering teams, the Phoenix Suns round out my lottery team. I don't know
Good
how
segue.
There's not a stigma around Devin Booker at this point. Maybe there is. I don't pay attention enough to the Suns, but like the dude doesn't. I don't know how much he helps his teammates. And have they really gotten anywhere with him as the centerpiece? And maybe DeAndre materializes, but they made some weird moves this offseason. Does Ricky Rubio help that much? What is he going to take? Is he going to help you get past the T-Wolves and the race to be the 14 seed? I'm just confounded. When you talk about some of the worst
owners. The race to be the 14 seed.
Yeah, in the race to be the 14 seed. Like, I don't know. When you talk about some of the worst owners in the league, Robert Sarver's got to be up there. They have not gone anywhere. And it's just, confounding that they are still... maybe it's not confounding that they haven't done anything in however long. I don't even know what their playoff drive is, but they inspire no direction, no fear. I'm just completely dead on them. Have I beaten this dead horse enough? Are we good here?
Yeah. The Suns horse is dead. Mike, we really thank you for coming on. We didn't want to end with such a dour note of the Suns, but no.
Well, we Denver's could give we could give Dishman a chance to ask the fan question. Do you have any fan questions?
Oh man,
sorry to put you on the spot there.
The thing I was thinking about just a minute ago. Have you seen you've probably seen it, the Nikola Jokic goldfish commercial with the passport?
Fantastic.
Oh my gosh! Have you two seen it?
I have not.
It has
a passport. Well, Eric doesn't have a passport, so
you don't need a passport to see it.
You need a passport to see a commercial, man.
Oh, it's wonderful!
Fantastic.
It's a great glimpse into, I feel like, how I imagine Nikola Jokic to be.
He is. And the funniest part about that commercial, if you haven't seen it, you got to go look it up. It's some Serbian commercial. Is that he shows this passport picture of him, which has gone viral a bunch of times. It's him with some chubby cheeks. And the funny thing is, in what world do you need a passport to obtain goldfish? are we just dismissing that part, or are we just saying it's so funny that we don't even care? It's like, all right, whatever.
Yeah,
this is funny.
That's fine.
Maybe it's a Serbian thing.
That was the burning.
Only for goldfish, though. Not other snacks. Just goldfish. You gotta have your passport.
Right.
That's amazing.
No real questions. Just excited to see him play this year. So I've got my calendar marked for when they come to Oklahoma City. So I'll be in the arena.
Are you gonna be wearing this exact same outfit?
Oh, I'll be wearing the jersey. Yes, for sure.
Hopefully he'll be playing.
Yes.
Mike, thanks for joining us, man.
Appreciate it. It was great.
And thanks to everyone for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast. Remember to subscribe, share, and listen to the podcast.
Like it,
Apple
love
podcast.
It.
Like it, love it, all that stuff. And we will see you probably next week with the final part of our Northwest Division series with a Portland Trailblazers writer to be determined. We'll get to that. We'll figure it out. We'll leave some mystery to it. Thanks again.